Today, will cheaper property attract more buyers, or will prices fall some more? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, on this post covering finance and property news, we're at a very interesting inflection point in the Australian property market, with housing affordability perhaps easing just a tad, even as more supply is coming, but at a time when interest rates are expected to still go higher. Demand remains quite strong, supported by still strong migration, but the data is still sending conflicting signals about what is really happening on the ground. More of that tomorrow with Edwin on our weekly property rant. Today, we'll look at the latest data from prices, auctions, and interest rate expectations. And looking at where interest rates may go, commentary from Sally Tindall, canstar.com.au's Data Insights Director, highlighted that the standout move this past week came from Bendigo Bank, which cut its lowest variable rate for refinance by 0.15 percentage points, taking it down to 5.89%. That makes Bendigo now one of 15 lenders still offering a rate below 5.9%. However, it's still a relatively long way off the market leaders at 5.69%, signalling there is competition in the mortgage market, with the total number of lenders that have lowered new customer variable rates now standing at 18. Competition among lenders continues to create opportunities for some households to cut their borrowing costs. Negotiating with your lender can get you on your way, but the biggest gains still typically come from refinancing, she said. Fixed rates are also continuing to edge lower, with five lenders cutting rates this week by an average of 0.22 percentage points. AMP Bank led the cuts, slashing some fixed rates by as much as 0.5 percentage points. But then, on the other hand, Westpac came out saying that they expect another two interest rate rises from the RBA this year, but then potentially a cut later in 2027. Now, this isn't supported by some other analysts who have a different read on the current inflation pulse, but the disruption in the Strait of Hormuz, including the current closure again, plus the massive AI investments sucking up and demanding ever more credit, to me suggests a higher path for interest rates, so borrowers be aware. And it's also worth noting that last week's APRA quarterly property exposure statistics showed that loans in the 30 to 89 days in arrears did rise slightly in the March quarter on the back of the RBA rate hikes, but it's still 0.49% of the loan book, so that remains below the long-term average. And the value of home loans on interest-only loans rose marginally in the March quarter to 11.8% of all mortgages, but that's again below average, which may be evidence that existing borrowers aren't switching over to interest-only in search of relief from rising rates. But while overall lending took a backward step in the March quarter, the proportion of new owner-occupied loans with a deposit of 5% or less hit a new record high, which isn't exactly ideal timing given the subsequent slide in property prices. And at 4.3% of all new owner-occupied loans, it's unlikely to have APRA worried, at least not yet. But below the surface, borrowing criteria are significantly tighter now. On average, some borrowers can only borrow 80% of what they might have done just a few months ago. And markets are pricing in at least one more rate hike this year, with 4.49% by December. And in addition, banks are seeing more requests for hardship relief, including interest-only loan switching or loan repayment holidays, both of which help to push financial pressures out for a few months, but doesn't solve the fundamental issues of affordability in a highly inflationary, low real income growth environment. And in terms of price movements, well, it's a mixed bunch there too. For example, nearly $50,000 has been wiped off Sydney home values since they peaked in January, putting the city's median price nearly back to where it was just a year ago. Melbourne's values are falling too, but there it's been a long and slower drag down. In both cities, prices are falling faster at the top end of the market, presenting a challenge for those homeowners who have been planning to cash out the capital tied up in their properties to downsize. So this might, in theory, give first home buyers and upsizers a chance to snap up bigger and better homes or houses in suburbs they had been previously priced out of, or simply to save significant amounts on what they had expected to pay. But the question is, why would you buy today if tomorrow prices will be cheaper still? Actually, in recent conversations, I'm seeing many potential buyers deciding to sit on the sidelines in the hope of more falls ahead. And in certain suburbs, there is a wide gap in terms of how much that mortgage will cost at a 95% borrowing compared to what the rent is per week. So they may want to purchase their first home and have something of their own, but no one wants to buy property with the view that it's going to go down. Households looking to trade up do seem more willing to consider a move, as they are buying and selling in the same falling markets with more choice of available homes. But the economics are still frightening, given the large stamp duty charges and other switching costs in a falling market. The reverse wealth effect is biting even here. The downturn has also put Labour in a pickle, as it seeks credit for its efforts to improve affordability for first home buyers, in part by curtailing generous tax concessions for property investors. But it has also been keen to distance the budget changes from the housing market downturn. A couple of weeks ago, Housing Minister Claire O'Neill acknowledged that the housing market was undergoing a price correction, only for Treasurer Jim Chalmers to dial down the admission hours later by insisting the price falls did not meet the technical definition of a correction. It's worth noting that house prices are already falling in Sydney and Melbourne, and they were falling before the May budget and the result of three consecutive interest rate rises and inflation fears that arose around the global oil price spikes. But in the weeks since the federal budget, auction clearance rates have plummeted to pandemic lows, and the pace of price falls have accelerated in the two biggest markets. The downturn, the threat of more rate hikes to come, and Labour's tax shake-up has spooked many buyers. Data from Loan Market showed first home buyer loan applications dropped by 12.2% between May and June in New South Wales and by 11.8% in Victoria. Over the same time period, investor loans fell by 18.5% in New South Wales and 14% in Victoria. And prices are falling in Melbourne too, dropping 2.6% over the June quarter, although the declines are coming off a much lower base. Melbourne's median dwelling price used to be the country's second highest, behind only Sydney, but now it's the country's third lowest at $808,000, ahead only of Hobart and Darwin. Sydney's median is at $1.27 million, followed by Brisbane at $1.12 million and Perth at $1.05 million. That's according to data from Cotality. Economists expect the downturn to deepen and prices to continue falling until at least the end of the year in Sydney and Melbourne, with the biggest falls forecast over the next few months. Barron Joey analysts have forecast that the bottom of the downturn in the major capitals will be hit in November. And Domain forecast price falls would moderate in the first half of next year and potentially start growing again if there is a rate cut at the end of financial year 2027. Forecasts beyond the next 9 months, though, vary considerably, with economists divided on which way the Reserve Bank will go on interest rates. Meanwhile, prices in Canberra have also begun to fall. Analysts are watching Brisbane, Adelaide and Perth closely to see whether those markets, which have been protected by tight supply and typically less interest rate sensitive, also go in the downturn direction. Australia's housing market actually is in the early stages of its ninth downturn in 30 years. It's worth noting the average downturn runs 8 months or so, with prices dropping 2.9%, but the deepest decline hit 7.1%. The upswings have been longer and significantly stronger, delivering an average of 32% growth over every 3 years, according to Domain. But, of course, that was with government support to first-time buyers and, of course, very loose lending from the banks. It's different this time. All of this brings us the latest auction clearance rate fog. Clearance rates, often considered by some the bellwether of the broader market, but actually, in reality, are more about just getting those clicks, remained weak due to headwinds spanning interest rates, global instability, general property tax changes, and the cost of living pressures. After 3 weeks below 50%, auction clearance rates bounced back to their highest level in 7 weeks, but on lower volumes, which constrained choice, and buyers and sellers hopefully, or maybe, getting acclimatized to the cooler post-budget market. But listing volumes were lower than last week, with volumes 8.7% down than the same period last week, partly due to the winter school holidays, but also combined with cautious vendors sitting on the fence. Cotelia reported the preliminary clearance rate across the combined capitals hit 54.8%, up on last week's 49.8%. And it was, by the way, then revised down to 46% on final numbers. True clearance, which we compare listed to sold, was 38.7% last week and 40.7% this week. In Sydney, initial clearance figures edged up almost 6 percentage points, with 57.5% of 452 properties sold, compared with the previous week's 51.6%. That's the highest figure in 10 weeks. True clearance was 42.5%, compared with 40.5% last week, so hardly stellar. Melbourne cleared 56.2% of 585 properties, based on the early results, up from 54.5% a week earlier, and the highest figure in 4 weeks. But true clearance was 44.1%, compared with 42.3%. Brisbane recorded an early clearance of 43%, up from the previous week's 23%, while Adelaide recorded 59.1%, up from 45.7% the previous week. But true clearances were 28.9% and 31.3%, respectively. SQM head of research, Luke Christopher, said while tight volumes had put a floor under clearances for now, the property downturn has a long way to go. If we see another cash rate rise, we're going to see more forced selling and more distressed selling, and we are concerned with some projects in Sydney where it looks like some developers will hit the wall, he said. On our numbers, house prices are now falling in Brisbane and Perth, but still rising in Hobart, Darwin and Canberra, albeit at much slower rates. So depends on who you listen to, I guess. And the rental story is also frankly horrid. Sydney remains the most expensive capital in the country, with the median home costing $841 a week as rents rose to a record level nationally over the June quarter. In Sydney, rents rose 1.5% over the quarter to be up 5.9% over the past year, according to Cotality, based on the latest listings. But of course, that doesn't include those with properties already let, where rents are still being lifted. Nationally, rents for all dwellings, houses and units climbed 5.9% annually, driven higher by a shortage of homes and pushing Australians to the limits of affordability, Cotality said. While Treasury forecasts that Labor's decision to curtail tax concessions for property investors will reduce the supply of homes and estimated rents could rise by $2 a week as a result, some economists, including former Treasury economist Peter Downes, forecast the impact of Labor's tax shakeup could be even worse, and Cotality's latest data is yet to reflect such an impact. We'll see. Rents have grown by 40.6% nationally over the past 5 years, pushing prices up by $204 a week. That is a stark contrast to the 5 years between 2016 and 2021, when rents rose by $55 or 12.2%, according to Cotality. Wage increase has not kept up. Households are spending about one-third of their income on rents nationally, but more in some postcodes, as we saw in our recent show, and in regional areas it's close to 35%. But 5 years ago, it was 27% Australia-wide. The national dwelling vacancy rate over the June quarter was at 1.6%, lower than the five-year average of 1.8%. And over the June quarter, Sydney rents rose by 1.5%, Melbourne up 1.4%, Brisbane up 1.7%, Adelaide at 1.9%, Perth up 2.3%, Hobart 2.8%, Darwin at 3.6%, and Canberra up 0.7%, again according to Cotality. While gross rental dwelling yields are trending higher, around 3.7% in the June quarter compared with 3.5% at the end of 2025, as house prices edge lower, they still remain below the cost of capital. And nationally, house rents are growing by 6.2%, while units are growing at 5.2% annually, according to Domain. And Domain's chief economist, Nicola Powell, said the acceleration in house rents relative to units were noteworthy. It's more concentrated in house rents, and I think that it says a lot about the affordability ceiling and the inability to pass on rent increases in the unit sector. And Powell noticed more single people were opting to live together to share one house instead of living in units. In our rental market, changes more rapidly occur because if you're priced out and you can't find that one or two bedroom to meet your need as a couple or a single person or a small family, you then change property type, you change location, you push further out into the burbs to get something that's more affordable, she said. And that's the point, really. The current housing affordability crisis, created by decades of bad policy from high migration to poor regulation and lack of public housing investment, has led us to this point. Actually, prices must fall if we are to deal with such poor affordability, and rents must drop. Not a good message for many, nor for the government. But I've said for many years, the bigger bubble over the longer term trends, the bigger fall we have to have. Gravity will win eventually. So, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultant standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer.
I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. My thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.